Max and I visited the other day. The thing that I felt was a potential area of weakness in the plan that you have for this fall is the matter of not an emphasis at all, really, seemed like, on the matter of teams. And I don't know why I felt that way. But let me just share with you something somebody else did, because I don't know anything about it, but I think it's good. And I made a note or two as I've gone along through here, and I think this might be of help just in considering teams. It's interesting that when God has something he wants to do, he usually starts with one man. And this has been true of the great movements of history, historically in Christendom. It starts with one man with a genuine desire to totally sell out to Christ. And because of this man's givenness, other men are banded around him, and they also catch fire. And then a movement's born. But it's also interesting to notice that God starts this with one man, but rarely does he end with one man. Now, that's a starting point, but that's not the ending point. I think the team concept is seen pretty well throughout the Bible, some of it in the context of families. You know, here's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, you know, their families operated as teams. And I think that you also see in the Bible bands of co-laborers like Moses. You know, Moses hooked up and had him some guys that he divided the responsibility up with, and they hauled it. And Nehemiah, you know, when he got ready to build the wall, well, boy, he had him a team. You know, he got it organized and divided the work up. And then a verse that's always meant a lot to me is 1 Samuel 10:26, where it says that there went home to Saul in Gibeah a band of men whose hearts God had touched. Well, you know, God put it together. And I think we see this also in the New Testament. There's no need for me to labor this with you. Acts 20 verse 4 is a good starting point on that. But what is a team? According to Webster's Seventh New Collegiate Dictionary, a team is simply a number of persons associated together in work or activity, apparently with or without a leader. That's what a team is, according to Webster. Now, the same dictionary defines a crew as a company of men working on one job or under one foreman. A gang is men assembled to operate simultaneously. A band is men united for a common purpose. And a group is a number of individuals assembled having common interests. So when we talk about a team, I think that oftentimes these words can be synonymous. You know, a band, a crew, a gang, a group, such as that. But there is a difference, it seems to me, between a team and a hastily formed posse. You know? I think there's some slight difference there. Or an arbitrarily gathered together group to go out and do house-to-house visitation. You know, there's a difference between a team and that. Some of the differences I think we can visit about here in a minute. But I think we need to realize this, that in a team, leadership is important. But also need to realize that every part of the team plays an important part. It's like an orchestra. It takes every part of the orchestra playing their note to make harmony, you know, to make the total sound pleasing as it ought to be. And in a team, the Holy Spirit has given each person different capabilities and a different slot to fill, perhaps. And only as each of us in the body of Christ is filling the slot that God has called us to fill, can the body function properly. Well, that's true in a team. You know, everybody on a team doesn't know everything. And everybody on a team can't do everything. But the team together can do a whole lot more than any individual can alone, because there are different gifts and different abilities. So I think that the team concept is biblical. I think it's very practical. There are at least five elements that identify a team. And these elements would be present. One is a common objective. The second one is an accepted leader. Third one is agreement on method and activities. You know, what are you going to do? Fourth fourth one is a strong sense of love and loyalty among the members. The fifth one is a certain division of labor within the group.
Delegation.
Delegation, knowing, you know, who's responsible for what. Let's talk about the advantages of a team for a few minutes. One advantage is just the matter of protection. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10. You know, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And then verse 12, which is blessed my old gizzard out of Ken Taylor's deal, where it says, one standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three is even better. A triple braided cord is not easily broken. I like that. You know. Well, that's one advantage of a team. It's just a matter of protection. Another one is balance and cross training. You may have in your team five or six people, all of whom are out of balance in one area or another. But the fact that the team is operating together tends to bring your out-of-balance area into balance with the rest of the team, and you tend to bring their out-of-balance area into balance with the team. And so it's just a matter of balance in a team being better than just balance as an individual, because you've got, it's like having a weight on a flywheel, you know. You slow the thing down or put it in balance where it's supposed to be. And then the matter of cross-training. No man is sufficiently skilled and equipped and sufficiently perfect to totally train any other man. And the reason being that no man is a perfect filter. And what you're giving another man has got to come through you, and it's not going to be pure. Somewhere you're going to filter out the goodies. And that being the case, you need the cross-training. Any man needs cross-training. Because you not only reproduce your strength, you reproduce your weaknesses, and everybody's got some. And so if you're the only one training him, you know, that old boy's in trouble. He's going to be just like you. What were we talking about? Oh, talking about balance and cross-training. Yeah, another advantage of a team is a matter of planning. You know Proverbs 24:6? The last part of it says, "In the multitude of counselors there's safety." Interesting that an editor of Newsweek magazine interviewed the heads of 100 of the largest corporations in America and sent questionnaires to another 300 in an effort to find a pattern for success in business. Here's what they found. He discovered that good executives had strong teams around them. The executive presents an idea to his team, lets them attack it, probe it, and offer suggestions. When the meeting is concluded, the whole team is ready to follow through on the plan. Planning. That's the reason that good executives do not surround themselves with yes men. Another advantage of a team is the tremendous power generated through teamwork. Jesus, I think, was giving us an inkling of this over in Matthew 18, verses 19 and 20. Isn't that the scripture that talks about where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. You know, if two of you should agree on earth as touching anything. You know, he was giving us a little insight into that, I think. The power of two together compared to the two separately, and there is a difference. The same truth is in Leviticus 26:8. You know, it talks about five of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000. Well, now, as near as I can figure out, in the first instance, that's 1 to 20. In the second instance, it's 1 to 100, isn't it? Yeah. Man, that's five times more effective. Well, evidently, there's some power that God's got figured out when you hook up together that it increases the voltage, you know. I don't understand all that, but I believe it's true. I think we see it in the Bible in the Tower of Babel. Genesis 11:6, you know, they joined together. Now, let's see what else we've got here. Another advantage is that team creates an atmosphere for the building of the basics. I think this can be good or bad. In the context of a team, the group pressure will almost make you function with the basics, you know? Because your peer pressure is there. But some people who are motivated that way, when they get out on their own, fall absolutely apart. And we can name some of them, couldn't we? We know them. And you do too, Skip. In the context of the navigators and a team ministry, you know, have function in the basics. But when they get out on their own, they find out that that which motivated them was not a genuine conviction in their own soul that this is what God wanted them to do, and they were not motivated by a love for God, but motivated simply by wanting to please the people with whom they were associated, and their lives fall apart. But I think a team is a good place to build the basics. Over in 2 Chronicles 32:31, Ken Taylor's translation puts it this way: God left him to himself in order to test him and to see what he was really like. And I think sometimes God does that. He may leave a man to himself as far as Christian fellowship is concerned. You know, find out really what's in his heart. You know, were you functioning, buddy, simply because you were in a nice, warm, hothouse atmosphere and fellowship and protected? Or are you functioning because you've got a heart set for me? And sometimes I think God may even withdraw the sense of his presence in order to test us and to see whether or not we are operating in the context of what we believe God wants us to do, because it is emotionally satisfying and we have a warm feeling that God is with us, or because we're doing it out of a heart of love for God regardless of what the emotions say. You know? That comes without additional charge. That just a little aside as we went by there. Another advantage in a team is leadership training. And beloved, leadership is largely a matter of helping others accomplish their objectives more effectively than they could by themselves. That's real leadership. I think it goes beyond that, Carolyn, personally. Because I think you can be meeting people's needs on an emotional level or a spiritual level without helping them to accomplish their objectives. You bet. You know, let's make sure that in the context of a team, we're helping people to accomplish their objectives more effectively than they could do it on their own. If they can do it more effectively on their own, what are they hanging around us for? You know? There are some dangers, and I just want to list them so that you have some idea what they look like. One danger is thwarting individual initiative, and that can happen. Another danger is inflexibility. And I'll tell you how you recognize that. If a man's been trained in the context of an inflexible team, you cannot pull him out of that team and put him with another team and have him function effectively. You know, he's become inflexible. If they don't do it this way, the way my team does it, then, you know, I can't function with it. And that can happen. Another danger is exclusivism. I don't know if that's a good word or not, but I think it communicates what I want to say. You know, that sort of a narrowness, an ingrownness, feeling that, you know, we've got the skinny and the rest of you guys are out in left field. And that's a danger. Another danger is overlooking man-to-man training. You can get so hooked up in the team ministry that you ignore the man-to-man ministry. But by far the most deadly is a team becoming an end in itself instead of a means to an end. I think a fancy word for that is narcissism. How do you like that? Isn't that a stem winder? You bet. But it just means it becoming an end in itself Now, that can happen in the context of training men. I've seen this happen. Matter of fact, I sat down with an old boy one day in charge of a big area. And I said to him, "What are you doing?" "Well, man, we're training men." I said, "Why are you training men?" "Well, we're training men in order that they may glorify God." I said, "Fine, and how are they going to glorify God?" "By training other men." And I said, "And what is the objective in their training other men?" "That they also may glorify God and train other men." I said, "Friend, from the standpoint of a stupid layman, it looks to me like you're off target. You know, the objective is to win the world for Jesus. That's the objective, is to get the gospel out. And it just happens that I believe training men's the quickest way to do it. But we do not train men to train men to train men to train men. We train men to equip them for the ministry of getting the gospel out and reaching people for Jesus. And it's also interesting to note that in the bands of men we find in the Bible, they were not banded together for training. They were banded together to get the gospel out. And the training took place in the context of it. Pardon me for getting a little excited about that, will you?
Win the war.
That's right, brother. Keep the objective in mind. Now let me say a word about team leadership. Leadership is not domination. 2 Corinthians 1:24 makes that pretty plain. You know, not that we lord it over your faith, Paul said. We work with you for your joy. And let me say parenthetically there, and I've got an interesting verse I want to share on that. I can find it. Oh, this will be a blessing. Yeah, it's 1 Chronicles 14:2. It says, David now realized why the Lord had made him king and why he had made his kingdom so great. It was for a special reason, to give joy to God's people. Isn't that good? Yeah. And I'll tell you, if God has put you in a position of leadership with a team, if God has given you that position, it's not that you might lord it over them, but it is that you might give joy to God's people. I think Proverbs 12:25 in the Living Series says that anxious hearts are very heavy, but a word of encouragement does wonders. Yeah. Second thing I'd say about leaders, they ought to be a servant. And I won't go into that further. You all got that figured out. The concept, I mean. You want some verses, you can have Matthew 20, 26, and 27, and 1 Corinthians 9:19, 1 Corinthians 9:22. You know, those are all interesting verses along that line. The third thing I'd say about him is he ought to be clear thinking. Now, what I mean by that is he better have his mission clearly in mind and be able to articulate the objective to the team. Be able to tell them where we're going. The fourth thing about him, he ought to be a man of confidence. A man of faith. If the leaders I know believed all the gloomy reports they received, they would not get a blessed thing done, but they would sit around waiting for catastrophe to strike. That's right. There are always people who will tell you why it cannot be done. There are always people that will tell you all the problems that you're going to face in trying to do it. But a man who's going to be a leader in a team concept has got to be a man of confidence and faith and say, "Well, great. You know, there's an obstacle. Now, let us plow on through it. We are well able." I believe that was Joshua's and Caleb's position, wasn't it? We're well able. Fifth, he must be a man of action. Sitting around what-whatting, you know. I want to share with you Acts 6. Find that in here. Acts 6, verse 22, I think it is. Yes, in the New English Bible. You know, it says of Moses that he was meekest of all men. But in Acts 6:22 it says, "Moses was trained in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, a powerful speaker, and a man of action."
722.
722? Thank you. Here, he's right. It is 722. He's rising. You got that memorized?
No, but I just, it didn't sound like Acts 7.
Thank you. Didn't sound like Acts 6?
Yeah.
That's the trouble, these guys spend all the time, you know, studying the Bible. They'll stay with you. I appreciate the help. 722. Yeah. Isn't that good, though? You know, Moses was a powerful speaker and a man of action.
Did it say there he was a powerful speaker?
Yeah. I just
read. Mighty in word and deed.
Well, what was his objections all about then to start out with?
Hmm? What do you mean?
Didn't he throw up some objections to start out with about being a speaker or leader?
Well, I know. God said, I'll be with your mouth. Well, evidently, no. God was. See, that's what it says there.
It didn't change.
He still got Aaron.
Yeah, he still had Aaron around. But evidently.
He
had
Yeah. He really didn't need him to start with, but he didn't know it.
And if a man's going to lead a team, another thing he's got to do is have determination. Stick-to-itiveness. Tremendous, you know, how people can get all excited about the least little old thing, you know, and just get all excited to death and get carried away with it, you know. But you look next day and ask him, well, what about that thing you're all excited about? What thing? What thing? You know. What are you talking about? You know, just like a goose, wake up in a new world every morning. But if a man's going to be a team leader, he's got to have some stick-to-itiveness, you know, some determination. Decide this is where we're going, and by the grace of God, we'll stick in there and make it fit. Now, that's one of Skip's life verses. I believe that's John 17:4, isn't it? I finished the work which thou gavest me to do.
Oh, you're right, 4. I'm sorry.
You did say 3 a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yes, I thought you said
17:4, yeah.
Gotta have
these laymen navigate
a
straight out of the
memory. Oh, me. I believe over in 2 Timothy 4, didn't Paul say, I've finished my course? What is it, 4:7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've finished my course. Well, that's a part of it. And then another thing that team leaders got to do is to have an appreciation for the gifts and abilities of the team members.
Could you include not only just the team member, but others?
Yeah, of course, I'm just talking in the context of the team now, you know. But yeah, we ought to have an appreciation for the body. Yeah. Eighth thing I'd say about that leader is he must be able to maintain a high level of morale. Now, one of the man and the navigator who I think has the greatest ability in this area is sitting at the table with us. I think Skip has a unique ability. And it may just be his Prussian military background, you know. but the facts are that he has the ability to maintain a fantastically high morale in the outfit that he's responsible for. And you can see this, you know, this crunch bird deal that he came up with several years ago. Well, that was a unifying factor for his whole region or division or whatever it was he was doing, you know. And he has that ability. And it's a fantastically important ability because morale will carry men through when other things have failed. You know? When everything else is quit, if they've still got good morale, they're still functioning. Let me give you an example. And I guess maybe the reason is because there's hope. In World War II, there was a second lieutenant had a recon platoon. And it was in the closing days of the war, and he got out ahead of the main body, and the Germans did one of their famous pincer movements and broke through the line and doubled around and cut him off. And here he and his little platoon are cut off out here with the Germans all the way around him, running out of food, running out of rations, you know, running out of ammunition, and running out of gasoline, and here they are. Well, they kept that position for more than 24 hours. And the second night, a friendly patrol made it through. And the friendly patrol brought some food and brought some ammunition. But most important of all, they brought a message from a higher echelon. And the message was, hold out, a relief column is on the way and should reach you in the next 12 hours. And the entire atmosphere of the platoon immediately changed. And whereas they were had gotten to the point where they were about ready to quit and give up to the Germans, they said, man, we can hold it. You know, and they did. You know, they just, they held it. Well, the thing that made the difference, nothing else had really changed, basically. They'd gotten a few more rounds of ammunition and a little chow. But nothing had basically changed logistically. The only thing changed was their outlook. The message had made the difference. And boy, if you can maintain the morale of the team, there's hardly anything going to down it. And then the next thing I'd say about the leader, and this is so important, y'all, the leader needs to be informed. Somebody asked Bernard Baruch one day to what he attributed his ability to make money, and you know he was a multimillionaire. And he answered simply, getting all the facts. I like that. Let me share a couple of verses with you on that. In Proverbs 24, verses 3 and 4, out of the Living Series, says this: any enterprise is built by wise planning, becomes strong through common sense, and profits wonderfully by keeping abreast of the facts. Isn't that good? I really like that. Now, I'll cross-reference that for you over in Proverbs 27, verses 23 and 24, which says, riches can disappear fast, and the king's crown doesn't stay in his family forever, so watch your business interest closely. Know the state of your flocks and your herds. Be informed. Know the facts. Now, that's true of team leader. You've got to know what's going on in the team. Be informed. Any of this make sense to you guys? Huh? Does it? Probably all old hat to you.
Tremendous amount of things happen at that point. Because in getting the facts, you know, it's not just the getting of the facts that does it. But also
the interpretation
that,
of them.
Yeah. It, you know, you think, well, just get the facts for your knowledge, but in getting the, that is interpreted by that the part of the flock, the team, the followers of the team that you didn't care about.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things happen there that it's not like just getting the facts, but in the doing of it, a lot of things take place.
Let me make two or three other observations and I'll quit on this topic of teams. You must be sure that the members of the team can operate both corporately and individually. Don't ever lose the vision of the basic rifleman. You know? If they're out on their own and they're away from the team, they ought to be a self-contained one-man army, you know? And don't lose the concept of the basic rifleman. And then if you study the book of Acts, you'll see that the teams in the book of Acts were not static. They were generally in a state of flux. Some people joining the team, some falling out. Some being left behind and some being gathered up. You know, they were in a state of flux. Paul was a permanent leader of the team, but the members changed. They came and went. They were in a state of flux. And then I want to reinforce my prejudice and remind you that that these teams that we read about in the Bible were not formed for training, but they were formed to serve in the gospel. That's the reason they were formed. And the training took place in that context. And I guess I'll quit with that. Anybody got any questions?
I have one.
Yeah.
Say next summer, as far as the summer training program I did, would be concerned with, you said it would be better to base it around a ministry objective rather than training for the
business. Ooh, you bet. That's the way I feel about it. Training for the sake of training is zilch, in my mind. Now, training in the context of accomplishing the objective, that's something else.
The question you'd have to analyze would be, if you have an objective for a year, you might have 10 weeks
training. It's just training without a mission.
Now you can pass that out and everybody can have a copy. That's the reason they were formed. And the training took place in that context. And I guess I'll quit with that. Anybody got any questions?
I have one.
Yeah.
Say next summer, as far as the summer program idea would be concerned, you would say it would be better to base it around a ministry objective rather than training.
Ooh, you bet. That's the way I'd feel about it. Training for the sake of training is zilch, in my mind. Now, training in the context of accomplishing the objective, that's something else.
The question you'd have to analyze would be, if you have an objective for a year, you might have 10 weeks of training. It's just training without a mission.
Now, you can pass that out and everybody can have a copy.
It's your
in much more detail. You know, I just sort of skinned it.
Yeah, we have training programs that don't have a mission. But that doesn't bother me because it's in a 4-year college career they got a mission. So 10 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever we have is in the light of a 4-year mission.